Good morning. This week is Parashas Pekudei, but it's also Parashas Shkalim. We read Parashas Shkalim on the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh Adar. It's a reminder to collect the Shkalim. And we'll try and look at Parashas Shkalim. It's a short piece at the beginning of Parashas Kisisa. And hopefully understand also the connection to Purim and to the month of Adar. So it's page 484 in the Arskel Chumash, beginning of Parashas Kisisa, and this first page is really the part that we read for Parashas Shkalim. So Torah says, "Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe l'mor." Hashem speaks to Moshe, saying, "Kisisa esrosh b'nei Yisrael." When you count the heads of B'nai Yisrael, lifkudehem, according to their numbers, v'nasnu, and they will give ish kofer nafsho l'Hashem b'fkodosam. A person will have to give atonement for his soul when you're counting them. V'lo yiyeh v'hem negef b'fkodosam, and there won't be a plague when you're counting them. And the entire pasuk is just very, very difficult to understand. The beginning is kisi, so when you count. So does Hashem want Moshe to count? He doesn't say you should go ahead and count. It should have said, "Su, go, count, do that." Hashem gives a commandment. It doesn't say that. It says, "Kisi so, when you count, then this is what you should do." So it's a little bit strange. Usually Hashem is more forthright with Moshe, saying, "Do this, don't do that." So what does he want from Moshe Rabbeinu? He's saying, if you feel like doing a count, I'm just going to give you instructions how you should do it. Maybe. But it's just an interesting way of the Torah, of Hashem relating to Moshe about counting them. And then when you're counting them, you have to give, each person has to give atonement for his soul. Why? What did everybody do? Why are we giving atonement for what? It implies that something was done wrong. What did anybody do wrong that when they're doing the counting, that they have to get kapara, that they have to have atonement? And then if you do this, there won't be a plague when you're counting them. Why should there have been a plague when you're counting them? It seems to be that's connected with the atonement, and that's why giving the atonement at the time of counting them will alleviate or at least prevent a plague from happening. But why would I have thought that any plague should come? Very strange. Continues being strange. So we'll go through all the strange questions and then try to understand it. This is what you should give. Kol ha'over al ha'pekudim. Anybody who is old enough for the census. Machatis ha'shekel. B'shekel ha'kodesh. You give half a shekel from the shekel which is holy. Esrim geira ha'shekel. How much is a shekel worth? It's worth 20 geira. Machatis ha'shekel. Again, a little bit repetitive. Half of a shekel. Truma l'Hashem. So why half a shekel? Why not a whole shekel? Why only half? What's the significance of half? And it repeats it. And truma l'Hashem. This is some sort of donation for Hashem. What are we donating for? Anybody who's old enough, above 20 years, yitain shumas Hashem, will give this donation to Hashem. Hawashir lo yabev, somebody is wealthy, he's not allowed to give more. Vahadad lo yamidem, somebody is poor, he cannot give any less. Mimachasis hashakel, only exactly half of a shekel. Vasitas shumas Hashem, to give this gift for Hashem, donation for Hashem. Lechaper al nafsho seichem, again, as atonement for your soul. So again, whatever this reason that we want to get atonement seems to be a repetition throughout this parsha.
Was that a lot of money at the time?
No. It was a little bit. Exactly how much it was, I'm not 100% sure, but again, considering that you have, you know, five shekel have to be given by the Pidyon HaBen, there are different amounts, but again, it doesn't seem like it was so much money. And why can't somebody who is wealthy, wants to give more as a donation to Hashem, why can't he give more? And if somebody can't afford it, why can't he give less? So lakachta, and you'll take as ketzav akipurim, this money of atonement, me'eis b'nei Yisrael.
How would they count if everyone gave different amounts?
So, if they gave a whole shekel as opposed to half a shekel, I mean, if they gave one coin.
That's what I'm saying, but if
okay, fine. So that might be one answer. But again, that would still be. But anyway, let's say you count it. If you're counting dollar bills, you can give a $1 bill. You can give a $100 bill. It's the same count. Meaning, if you count the actual physical bills or physical coins, then that would have been enough. It's true. If everybody would be giving different amounts, then a different number of coins. If one person would give two, one person would give three.
You don't want to make it too bad.
I think that's definitely part of it.
That's
That seems to be why. Why is that fundamental to counting? We'll have to try and understand. Absolutely, that point is important. So the kaftan, you'll take it, ketzer kippurim, this money that tum meis bnei sof nasa'ato, sewing, what will you do with it? You'll put it al avodas ohom aweid, to the work that's done in the ohom aweid. V'hayal divnei yisrael l'zikaron ifnei Hashem, l'chaper nafshel sechem, you might as well end up with atoning for our souls, since that seems to be this theme, which exists throughout. So in addition to the basic questions, there's a strange comment that Rashi makes, based on Chazal, it's based on a Medrash. The Rashi is Zeh Yitnu and Pasuk Yigimel. This is what you should give. So Rashi says, Here Elo Kimin Matbea Shel Eish. Hashem showed him a coin made out of fire. Umishkala, and its weight was Machatis HaShekel, was half a shekel. V'Amar Lo, and Hashem said to Moshe, Kazeh Yitnu. Meaning, commenting on the fact that it says Zeh Yitnu. Zeh implies that there is something, that we can identify what it is. So why does it say Zeh? You know, it should say, you give whatever it is. What's Zeh? It sounds like you're pointing to something. So Rashi explains, based on Chazal, that Hashem showed Moshe Rabbeinu the coin. He made this fiery coin, and he showed Moshe Rabbeinu what the coin looked like, and that's the Zeh Yitnu. Why the coin made out of fire? What was he showing him? And I guess what makes it a little bit more difficult, the Gemara in Menachos says that there were three things, Shlosha Dvarim Hayu Kashin Lo Moshe. There were three things that Moshe had trouble with in constructing the Mishkan. Ad Sheheru Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'atma. So God Himself had to point and say, this is what I want you to do. Ve'ilu Hein, what were the three? Menorah, the menorah, and that Rashi points it out on the Torah also. Menorah is very intricate. It has to be made out of one piece. Moshe couldn't figure out exactly what it looks like, so Hashem chose Moshe. This is what they want the menorah to look like, and chose him a menorah. Rosh Chodesh, exactly what the moon should look like. There are pages and pages of Gemara to understand exactly at what point is it considered to be a new moon for Rosh Chodesh. So Moshe had difficulty just understanding when God said, oh, when the new moon comes, you should have a new month. So Hashem had to show him what it looks like. Okay, very understandable. And the third, Ushratzim, and which creepy, crawly things are Tameh and Kosher and okay, also very difficult just based on names alone to identify. The Medrash says these three things, and the Medrash adds the fourth, is that Moshe Chalwith was the Machatzis HaShekel. What's so hard on Machatzis HaShekel? It's a coin. Take a coin, God tells you how much the coin should weigh. Why? What was Moshe's difficulty with the Machatzis HaShekel, that God had to show Moshe with a fiery coin what it looks like? The other three were these very elaborate, intricate things with all these details, so Moshe didn't know what it looks like. Machatzis HaShekel? What's so hard? It seems to me he showed it to Moshe, and then Moshe knew what to do and knew how to help everybody else. Now, I guess he had to be able to explain it well, and Menorah had to be able to explain well to Bezalel what to do. Maybe Bezalel saw it also, but at least Hashem had to guide Moshe in what it should look like. And then further difficult is the fact that the Gemara in Menachos doesn't even say this. The Gemara only says three things, while the Medrash has four. So we'll try and understand that as well. Okay, so what's this counting all about? Again, and the first question which hits you is, does Moshe Rabbeinu have to count the people or not? It says, Kisisa, when you're going to count the people. It doesn't say, God didn't command, Su, go ahead and count. So was Moshe Rabbeinu supposed to count? What's the purpose of the counting? So the Medrash says that the purpose of the counting is, and this will inform some of the other details later, as we'll see. We'll do it now. It will inform some of the other details that we'll see later on, that the reason that we're counting is because this takes place after the plague of the Cheka Egel. So Hashem wanted to show Moshe and show Bnei Yisrael that even though the people sinned, I still love the people and I still want Bnei Yisrael to be my special nation. The problem with that is the Cheka Egel is taking place a few pages later. Okay, it's not the end of the world. Again, we don't usually encourage. Usually, there's a reason why the Torah goes out of order. I'm not sure what the reason would be here, but.
And why does counting show that?
Well, you count something that you that's precious to you. If that's, I think the example that they give is they said that if you have a shepherd and a wolf attacks the pack of sheep, so afterwards the shepherd counts up to see, kind of, you know, see the damage and assess what's going on and to, you know, start again and to, you know. Okay, that's what I think that's what the Medrash says. So the Ramban says, so Rashi says, one step at a time. So again, if you understand that it's to show that Hashem still loves Bnei Yisrael after the Chet HaEgel, so certainly the idea of the count somehow being connected to getting kapara for the Chet HaEgel works very well.
Right.
So if you
understand, love for him, for them.
No, it doesn't. Well, the fact that he's willing to take us back also does show. I mean, we. You know, veered away from Hashem, and Hashem is willing to take us back. Certainly does show that he cares enough about us to take us back. He could have just said, like, it sounds like he was ready to say, you know, I'll start a new nation, and Moshe Rabbeinu will be the beginning, and we'll start again from scratch. So he didn't say that. If you understand that it has to do with the Chet HaEgel, then all the kapara certainly makes a lot more sense, and we're not going to understand that way, which again, chronologically, works better if it's not connected to the Chet HaEgel, unless you say that Hashem was somehow anticipating what was going to happen later, but that obviously we're not very comfortable in saying that we have to give the kapara in advance because the Chet HaEgel is about to happen. Again, God knows what's going to happen, but to telling us to do kapara in advance probably doesn't fit so well with us. So that's one approach. Now Rashi sounds like the first Rashi says, "Kisi soloshon kabbalah ketargumo kishe tichpos the kabbal schum minyanim ladas kamahem al timnam lagil golas." Rashi says, "When you want to count Bnei Yisrael, then you shouldn't count them by individual person, by skulls, right? By heads. So rather, you should give the machatzis hasheka." So Rashi even sounds like Hashem wasn't necessarily telling Moshe that he had to do a count right now. He was just telling Moshe Rabbeinu that, you know, you're the leader. At some point, you might want to take a census. You might want to know how many people you have. You should just be aware that I have certain guidelines that need to be followed when counting people. But it almost sounds from Rashi, it says, kishetachbos lekabel. When you want to know the total number of people, then do it. But the reason that it's written without saying a commandment is because there was no commandment. He wasn't instructed by Hashem that you have to count Bnei Yisrael right now. And the Rashbam says something similar. And he basically sounds, I think the Abarbanel says this as well, that really the main purpose of counting right now was an easy way to quickly get a lot of money for the purpose of building the Mishkan. Right? He starts off from Truma and Tetzaveh, Hashem started telling Bnei Yisrael, you should give donations to Mishkan, this is what's going to have to be built, all the vessels, all the kelim, all the big day kahuna, all the details, everything that's going to have to be built. So what's the quickest way? Moshe didn't know that what we read in last week's parsha, that so much is going to come that Moshe is going to have to beg them to stop bringing because there was so much money coming in, so many donations coming. So right now Moshe realizes, okay, and Barbara, I think, even says it was Hashem's suggestion. Hashem says, you know what, why don't you count the people now? My rule is that for counting, you have to count something, so have everybody give a small donation, and immediately you've brought in, you know, so much money that's used for the Adonim, was used for the sockets, that's, I think, in Parshas Pekudei. For this donation, it was this. Anybody that wants to write a separate check afterwards, they'll accept it. But for this specific collection, right, it was limited, but it ensured that every single person gave. So that's what the Rashbam says. The Ramban says something a little bit different. The Ramban says, Tziva HaKadosh Baruch Hu es Moshe, Hashem commanded Moshe, like Rashi, Ka'asher, when Tisa Asrosh Bnei Yisrael, B'minyon, when they're going to count Bnei Yisrael to get the number, Yitnu Koper Nefesh Machatzis HaShekel, they should give this Machatzis HaShekel to atone for themselves. Umizeh yilmod Moshe sheyimno sam'ata. And from the fact that Hashem was telling him right now at this time the instructions for counting the people, Moshe Rabbeinu understood that God wanted him to count the people. So it takes the similar. So it wasn't that there was a commandment from Hashem. Still doesn't fully understand why there was no commandment.
Why not just give a commandment?
Right. Yeah. Maybe we'll try to explain that shortly. It didn't say why there was a why. It didn't say that there was a commandment, but Moshe Rabbeinu understood that God's will, his intention was by giving the directions for how to count Bnei Yisrael, how to take a census, was that he wanted it to take place. Was that he wanted it to take place right now?
Were there people that who could not afford this?
It seemed like there were people that it was difficult. We don't.
Maybe that's why it wasn't mentioned.
Interesting.
No, but
in the end, they're going to have to do it, right? In the end, they're going to have to borrow money. They're going to have to do something because it says even the poor person had to give this minimal amount.
So when you think he says when you are going to count, so it is almost a commandment.
It's a commandment that when you're counting, do X. This is how you should count.
Saying if you count.
Saying when? At some point, right? But when? It could be, I don't know, when David HaMelech is going out to war, he should count. He should follow these rules.
But he's not saying he sees through. He's saying.
Because he realizes there's going to be one person in charge who's going to be doing it. I mean, a census isn't something that I'm not going to be the one who's taking the census. It's going to be something which is done by whoever's in charge of the nation. You're based on these different rules, so we learn out and different ways of counting Jews, and there are a lot of interesting halachic discussions as to how we're counting people, meaning if you're counting people's thumbs, or you're counting people as not one, what have you really accomplished? You're still counting people.
You're saying when Hashem says when you, he's not referring specifically to Moshe, he's saying whoever it is that's taking the census? That's my first question. My second one is, anytime you take a census, this is what you have to do?
So that's exactly, I think, the answer to the question. Right now he's talking to Moshe, and he's saying when you take the census. The question was, why didn't he command Moshe to take the census, and instead leave it up to Moshe to understand that this is what you're supposed to do, and that's why I'm telling you to do it right now. So maybe the explanation is that, and I think this is what the Ramban means, not 100% sure if he says this part, but I think that's what he means, based on something that he says later on, which is that if he would have said Kisi saw, if he would have said Su'u, this is what you should do, Moshe, or saw, I guess in the singular, because it's Moshe doing the counting, if he would have said that, then all we would know is that Moshe Rabbeinu had a commandment that at this particular time, when he's counting the people, this is how he should count the people. Now what happens when the first kings come up and they want to take a census? What do they do? Okay, they might follow the model of what Moshe Rabbeinu did, because you have to model somebody. Moshe Rabbeinu is certainly a good person to model, but in terms of there being a commandment, there wouldn't have been a commandment had it been written like that. By saying Kisi Sa, now it's that any time in the future in Jewish history when they're going to want to take a census, they should follow these rules. So yes, it's being said to Moshe. Moshe's understanding that God's will is that the census should take place right now, but by writing it this way, he teaches us that it's a mitzvah ledoros also. It's also for the generations to come. That any time a count is supposed to happen, it should take place in this way. I think that the Ramban is saying this because the Ramban points out that David HaMelech seems to have made this mistake. David did count the people, and there was a plague that ensued. And the Ramban says that everybody's bothered with the pasuk in Chumash. How could David HaMelech not have counted properly? What did David do wrong? So different farshim have different ways of explaining. The Ramban says, "Mipnei shelon isparish kani himitzvah doros, oh l'shaa l'moshe b'medbar." Since it's unclear from the psukim whether this is specifically a way that Moshe should count the people, or whether it's something which is going to apply for generations to come, it was this mistake that David made. David misinterpreted the pasuk. He understood that the commandment that was said to Moshe was for Moshe's census. That when Moshe is counting the people, it should be done in a way with this machas yisashekel. But him, who's living, you know, so many years later, and he's already coming to count the people, it doesn't require that. Okay, maybe he could have done it if he wanted to, but he didn't understand that the reason. What we're explaining now, again, we have the example of David and the Rishonim to explain it. We wouldn't necessarily have understood this on our own, but we understand that really was written this way to tell us that it was a mitzvah for all generations. Others deal with the question in other ways and try to explain what mistake David HaMelech made, or maybe he wasn't really the one that made a mistake, it was really Bnei Yisrael, and just kind of had to happen through David HaMelech. That's a little bit of an aside, but that helps deal with this question a little bit. There's a fascinating Ramban, it's a little bit off topic, but it's an important piece of Jewish knowledge to know, which the Ramban does say here also. He says, why is it called Shekel HaKodesh? Why isn't it just called a Shekel? What makes the Shekel into a holy Shekel? Why isn't it just a regular shekel? So there I'm.
The word machatzit mean? Why is it not chatzi?
It means half of. I don't know. It's more of a grammatical point. I'm not sure.
No, not machatzit. I'm talking about why it's kadosh.
Oh, okay, yeah. Sorry, I don't know the answer to why. I don't know what would be more correct in biblical Hebrew. No, but why it's kodesh?
Why it's called kodesh is because it's served as an installment, as a korban.
So maybe.
You're using it for the ohels, right? Aren't you using it
for the sockets? Good. Good. So that's what the Ramban says. The Ramban says that the reason it's called Shekel HaKodesh is because there are so many, not just it's being used for the Mishkan here, but it's being used for Pidyon HaBen, and it's being used for Arachin, and it's being used for all these different halakhas where there's an amount of money they have to pay. It's being used for holy purposes, so that's why it's Shekel HaKodesh. And the Ramban says, it says,
they didn't call
Mechoshek
Kodesh, meaning when you take something that's whole and you make it into Kodesh, they don't call other things Kodesh, so why here?
That might, right? That was what we were saying before. That might be part of the reason. Again, I'm not sure if the Ramban is trying to explain why the Torah we should always say it, or the fact that the Torah said it here is revealing. And that we are, also the difference is that they're referring, by Nechoshes, we're referring to the metal. Okay, the Maaseh Tzobos is an exception, but there the Torah identifies it as an exception. But here we're just simply talking about a coin. What's special about the coin itself, not just metal? So the Ramban says, V'chein kol shikla ha-mishkam, v'chein kol kasev kasev ambar Torah. Anytime it's a set amount of money in the Torah, yikrilo ha-kasev shekel ha-kodesh, the Torah often referred to as shekel ha-kodesh. And the Ramban says, based on this, he says, V'chein ha-tam etzli, this is also why, the Ramban says this is why Hebrew is also referred to as Lashon HaKodesh. Shehumi Pnesha Divrei Torah Vahanevuos Vichol Divrei Kedusha Kulam Belashon Hunemru. Nevuos, Torah, all these holy things are said in Hebrew, and therefore becomes Lashon HaKodesh. The reason that this is important is because he points out that the Rambam did not understand this way. The Rambam explicitly says that there's. Mostly. But the Rambam has a completely different understanding of why Hebrew is called Lashon HaKodesh. And the Rambam says, V'arav Amar B'mor Nevuchim, Al Tachshov Shenikol Lashoninu Lashon HaKodesh, the Goseinu, the Tosinu, the greatness of the language itself. About Hu B'din, rather it makes sense. Ki Zeha Lashon Kadosh, why is, what's so holy about Hebrew? The Ramban would say, well, that's the God uttered these words in Hebrew and it created the world. Like the Baal Tanya writes that, you know, in order to create a rock, so you had to take an Evan. So all the powers of an Aleph, together with the powers of the Beis and the powers of the Nun, they all come together and manifest itself. There are spiritual aspects to the letters, and there's so much to it. The Ramban says, nothing doing, no. Why is it called Lashon HaKodesh? Ki zeh Lashon Kodesh lo yimsu bo shemos le'ever abiyila bezachar ben akeva. Says that the organs of sexual reproduction don't have a word to refer to them in Lashon HaKodesh. And that's what makes the Kodesh. And he says, v'lo l'tipa, l'shesen, l'tsoa, all the things that would be inappropriate or crude words don't exist in Lashon HaKodesh. In modern Hebrew they exist. In Lashon HaKodesh they don't exist. And the Rambam says that's what makes the language kadosh. A language which doesn't identify these things, it only talks about things that are either mundane or kadosh, but nothing less than that. That's what makes it kadosh. Oh, it's an important idea. It might have things to do with other machlokas in between the Ramban and the Rambam. But he mentions it in this parasha, thought it's interesting. It does, but those aren't on the same level of being. Again, the Torah does sometimes.
But what's the body part? It's a body part.
Yeah.
How do you do a bris? How do you describe a bris without
naming
a body part?
It says orla s'thar orla so. It just talks about the orla.
Maybe.
I think everything can be used for whole. Hey, nobody likes this. That's Laura likes the Ramban.
So how do you transmit it in the Torah of the bris if you can't name it? Unless you just, it seems like it would be very risky that you just lose
the Torah was able to do it.
Yeah, I know what that is.
Everybody seems to have understood it. Avram passed it down. Moshe.
You made a mistake.
Oh boy. Okay. Okay. We'll stick to the Ramban. I thought it's an important thing to be aware of. Okay. Rabbeinu Bachya says again, commenting on this language that the parsha opens up with of Kisisa. As he says, "V'aderech apshat amar kisisa v'lo hizkir bo dazed davar derech tzivoy." Why does it say kisisa when you count? It doesn't command the counting. Kadesh sheikanes v'yichlo bezel sholo doro. Similar to what the Ramban says, is that the Torah wanted to make it clear that this applies any time throughout history that you're going to want to take a census. These are the rules that need to be followed. Okay, very similar actually to what the Ramban says, is that it was the reason that David made a mistake was because of this unclarity. He misinterpreted that this mitzvah was only said to Moshe when really it was meant for all generations. So what's this kofar nafsho? What are we atoning for? So the Sforno makes an interesting comment. So the Medrash again says it atones for the Chetah Egel, which again, if it's being commanded now because of the Chetah Egel, that all fits together very, very nicely. And it's actually a tremendous chesed from Hashem that he's allowing them basically, instead of being punished, you know, their bodies to be punished, they can give in money instead of their bodies in order to atone for this sin of the Chetah Egel. The Sforno says the difficulty with that, again, is that if we understand that the Torah is teaching us guidelines for counting forever, so then everywhere where it says kofar, we kind of have to delete that in the future counts. Meaning the rules are the same. The rule is that you have to count b'sheka with the machatis ha-shekel, or at least not count directly the people. But why would it be that we would always call it kofar namsho? The kofar namsho, the atonement, is only in this generation, because it's atoning for the chetah egel. Unless you say one of these... The general idea is that it's a kind of sin that we have to atone for forever, and for some reason whenever we count, but why would we say that? It doesn't necessarily follow. So, it's not a problem per se, but then the within the details of the counting, wherever it says kofar nafsho, really is referring specifically to this count and not to the other counts. The Sforno says, and tries to make it into a more general point, and maybe for this very reason, that if it's a mitzvah which exists beyond simply what happened in the desert, it's going to be a mitzvah every time that you count, so it should have broader implications. So the Sforno says, "V'nasnu ish kofar nafsho," what are you giving this atonement for? "Ki akares haminyan b'ishehu adam humitzad, hishtanus hakorah b'ishav, me'avaya v'hefsev." Why are you counting? There's a king over a nation. How does he decide when he's going to count or not? What's the purpose of the counting? So obviously the purpose of the counting is because numbers change. Why do numbers change? People are born and people die. It's the way of the world. If the number always remains the same, then you would take one count and you'd never have to count again. The only reason that you're going to have continuous, you know, you're going to update the count every, you know, however many years, is because there are going to be changes in terms of the number of people being born and the number of people dying.
Who needs to know how many people there are? So
we're not counting for God. I mean, in this case,
who needs to know how many people there are?
The king might need to know. David, I think, was waiting ready to go out to war. Again, we're not even counting all the people. We're counting all the people above 20.
But when they're in the desert, what purpose?
What purpose was this count?
Well, this count we're saying is just different because it's...
So either this count was different. Either it had to do with the response to the Chetah Egel. Either was it, this is what the Abarbanel suggests. Yeah, the Abarbanel suggests that Moshe Rabbeinu was going to be going out to war also at some point in the near future, and the Chetah Meragim didn't happen yet. So as far as they knew, it was very near in the future, they were going to be fighting a battle for Eretz Yisrael. They had to kibush Eretz, they had to conquer the land. And no, they didn't count every person, it was only people over 20, it was the people that were going out to fight. So the fact that this is a census for the purpose of war is very understandable.
Why is it component?
Anybody over 20, the 80 also.
Right. They were the advisors in the back.
Why didn't Hashem just tell them?
Why didn't Hashem just tell them? I don't know.
Meaning they obviously were very close. So maybe very close time.
Right. That's all true.
Production of this.
So
is not necessary.
So that might be either for the purpose of getting donations to the Mishkan. Again, there we have a few ulterior motives that we have, is to gain the money for the Mishkan, and to get the people atonement. So we do have some ulterior possible motives. So the Svarno says, "But so what does this Kofar Nafshah have to do with all future countings?" He says, "Well, why do people die?" So the Gemara in Shabbos tells us, "Ein misa b'lo chet." Okay, we don't try to figure out what sin a person did. Practically, people die because they sin. Again, at what point God decides to do things? Okay, it's not a very pleasant thought, but that's just the way of the way of the world. So therefore. Therefore, since in the context of accounts which is being done because people have been lost to sin, so we want a general kapara. We want this to be a source of atonement, and things should be better. Things should be better for the future. They also have 3,000 people for the Chet Ha'egel. Right, I think what the Sforno was trying to gain is trying to give an explanation that would explain for future counts also that there's still an element of kapara. For the Chet Ha'egel, I think that is fairly straightforward, that's the kapara.
Right.
They sinned, they needed forgiveness. But I think what the Sforno is trying to gain is to say that in all future counts, the reason they need to give the money is because the money's always going to be a kapara. Why? Because the count is always bringing back the sins, and it's good to have... Kapara.
And why 20? Like, why not bar mitzvah?
I'm not
going to
go fight.
So you're talking
about the atonement.
So again, that might just have to be also with the ulterior motives. Rashi says, "Limzuchah kan shein pachasi v'nesin yotze l'tzava," is that it's teaching us here that the age of 20 is the age to go out to war. How did everybody else get kapara? I guess they went to shul and said vidui. I'm not sure. Maybe they could have given.
Point, is there anyone in Torah that says that they're at age 13? That's when you're.
No. No, because the Gemara learns that. The Gemara learns that. Tadach al Moshe Mitzinai. We do have 20. Oh no, that's the answer. I'm sorry. The Gemara understands from this that you don't get punished until you're 20. Right, when you become a bar mitzvah when you're 13, you don't become a bar onshin, somebody who can get punished until you're 20. So I think that's learned out from here. So they didn't actually need the atonement until they were 20. Good, thank you for reminding me. Perfect.
They don't need to know that. They don't need to know that at 13.
No, but you can get punished for what you do between 13 and 20 when you're 20. So it's not, it just pushes it off. I mean, it gives you the chance. I think the assumption is that Hashem, in His mercy, gives us the chance to realize that in that age gap, we're more likely to maybe make certain mistakes, and therefore we have more time to fix it up. Okay, without trying to...
Go to Israel, so you're right before
exactly, that. That's why. Exactly. So... The Chizkuni also, I think, is trying to. He doesn't understand. He doesn't have any mention of the Chet Ha'egel, the Chet Ha'egel connection. So if you don't understand this, after the Chet Ha'egel. So even in the Midbar, what's the Kofar Nafshah? Because the Kofar Nafshah, and Rashi in one place seems to say this as well, is that the money that's being used is being used for the purpose of the Mishkan. It's being used for the Adonim, it's also being used for Korbanos. And Korbanos, the purpose of a Korban, is to be Mechaper, is to atone for people's sins. So that's the Kofar Nafshah. It's not that the money magically is, Kaparas and, Zet HaChazet, and the money now, the coins or the chicken, has all these, all the Averas on it. But it's that you're using it for something which brings atonement. And that's why it's called, Kofar Nafshah. Rashi and Rabbeinu Bachya seem to work with what's the, I think, most well-known understanding, which has to do also with what's this magefa, what's this plague that we're trying to avoid. So Rashi seems to say, "L'chapara nafsho seichem," why do you need kapara when you count? "Shelo tinogfu alidei haminyan," that a plague should not come because of the counting. Why should a plague come because of the counting? So Rashi explains, "V'lo yevohem negev," that they shouldn't have a plague. "Shehaminyan sholei bo ayin hara v'adover bo aleyam k'moshem atzin obimei David." That counting brings out the ayin hara, and bringing out the ayin hara is potential for a plague, and therefore, as a preemptive measure to make sure that the count is not going to lead to a plague, you give the money as potential kapara. What's this?
Who said that?
Rashi says that. Rabbeinu Bachya, I think, tries to explain a little bit more what's this ayin hara idea that has to do with the count. Again, because I understood on multiple levels, but I think what the easiest to understand on a rational level, in terms of what this ayin hara is about and what the counting does, and I think what Rabbeinu Bachya means, is that Hashem has a different way that He looks at individuals, and then He looks at the tzibur, as a community. And when a person can sort of blend in to the community, then his lot can be cast together with that of the community, and Hashem will normally act with more rachmanas and more mercy towards the community of Jews as a whole. When you count, what are you doing? You're identifying each person as an individual. The kisitzas, rosh b'nei yisrael. You're taking each person out and identifying them separately. When you're identifying them separately, then Hashem's hashkacha, or whether the satan is the one that causes this, that's already a little bit beyond me. But the point being is that every person, once he's separated from the community, is looked at as an individual. When you're looked at as an individual, you don't have the merits of the tzibur as a whole. You're looked at as based on your own deeds. So,
what if you're a Noah?
If you're Noah, according to who? That Noah was good, or that Noah was...
Right. Like, what if you're in a community that's bad, and you're the only good one?
So that hopefully your deeds help you stand out. But again, it's clear that you know, if there would be... You know, Avram was saying to Hashem that if there were a group of tzaddikim, then they would be able to separate themselves. Again, a person can separate... If a person identifies himself separate from the seaboard, he can also separate himself. A person can, you know, be this individual who's going to be doing everything on his own and has created for himself a sense of being separate from the tzibur. But it's brought down in many of the svarim that one of the best etzos that they give advice for a positive judgment on Rosh Hashanah is to do things on behalf of the tzibur. Because when you're doing chesed on behalf of the tzibur, you're making yourself part of the tzibur, and then you can be judged as part of the tzibur, and not just... Obviously, Hashem looks at everybody as an individual also, but we don't necessarily want to be looked at as individuals alone.
So
we
count like
the minion. Well, it kind of depends. When you have a lot of people, you don't have to count. You just know you have a minion. So that, again, it's an interesting topic, and it's a little bit confusing. Again, from Rashi, again, here they're counting based on the shekel. So if they're counting based on it, and yet even though they're counting based on the shekel, it sounds like you still need the shekel to be kapara. But it's so... Let's start again. If it's the count which is causing which causes the potential for the magefa, for the plague, and if you're counting not directly the people, then it shouldn't be an atonement per se. It should just be the fact that I'm counting coins as opposed to people should avoid the problem. It shouldn't be that it needs to be an atonement for the problem. So that's one way of possibly understanding it, but it's not a simple understanding. It sounds like you still need to have atonement, even though you're counting in this way. So it sounds like if you count directly, so you have major problems, you still have a problem if you're counting using the coins. But since you gave a coin and you gave a donation, that can serve as a kapara, which pushes aside that potential problem. So what comes out is that it seems to be that, and some learn that this was actually the chait of David, that David used coins. David understood that the pasuk was talking about even the doros, and that everybody, any count in Jewish history is always going to have to be done using the machzit hashekel, and that's what he did. What was the problem? The problem was that he counted for no reason. And the Torah was saying here is that when you're counting and there's a reason to count, then you do it for this, then you should do it in this way, and by doing the machzit hashekel, it will get rid of the potential for the magefa. But what we see is that even if you're counting through the machzit hashekel, you needed that atonement, because you're not supposed to be counting. David HaMelech's sin was that he counted just to know how many people there were, because he wanted to say, I have a very large kingdom. And then, in that case, even using the machzit hashekel doesn't help. So again, what that means in terms of a practical context is that counting people for no reason is frowned upon, even if you're doing it in a strange way.
But then why should the people get a magefa?
So the Mefarshim explained that the people... So first of all, if you learn that it has to do with the ayin hara, so it's... meaning it's not a punishment for counting wrong. It's a byproduct. Right. It's the fact that the count took the individuals out and identified them as individuals, which then brings Hashem's judgment as individuals. It wasn't a good thing. But that's why people always, you know, don't want people looking at them because of ayin haras, and they're poo-pooing and doing whatever else they do to avoid ayin hara. And again, I don't fully understand all those things, but this is what it says in Rashi, I try to understand.
So how do you give David a Melech a kingdom and tell him that he's not allowed to count? I mean, how are you supposed to run a kingdom when you...
So I think if there would have been a purpose, it would have been fine. These Mefarshim are explaining that in this particular instance, he didn't have a reason. It didn't affect taxes, and it didn't affect garbage pickup, and it didn't affect... I don't know, whatever you have to... It didn't affect war. Whatever it is that a king has to do, these Mefarshim... Too much, again, just trying... It's hard to... The starting point is that it's hard to believe that David made this mistake on a Pasuk in Chumash. And we don't have this listed as, you know, one of the sins of David that we and try to explain exactly what happened. So just trying to understand. So the ways of understanding it either seem to be that he misinterpreted the Pasuk because the Pasuk isn't explicit, or this way he says, no, he followed everything that it said, but he didn't understand that you're still not supposed to be counting if there wasn't a particular purpose.
And how was he supposed to have learned that you're not supposed to be counting? Does it say specifically anywhere? You're not supposed to be counting without a purpose?
No. That was, again, that just in, from the context or just based on his understanding. What I suggested now is just based on the fact that even the Machzor of the Shekel still needed a kapara, sounds like counting even through something else is frowned upon. Where exactly he should have known, I'm not sure. Maybe he just... He knew from his mistake, and it was an unfortunate mistake. It doesn't say that he was punished. Again, if you learn that the plague wasn't a punishment, but rather, although in the context of the Navi, it might be hard to say that, but it's a little bit off topic. So in terms of, there are many interesting halachic discussions as to, so how can you count people, and what does it help to count? We know that the Kohen in the Kohanim in the Beis Hamikdash, they used to do a lottery for the for who would get which avodas. They would stick out their fingers, and they would count. And they would count fingers. Why is counting fingers any better? Because they discuss different cases. You have a wedding list, and you're counting names in order to make tables, so you're still counting people. You're counting their name as opposed to counting the person. There's a lot of halachic literature on it. It's an interesting topic, but it's beyond our purview. Okay. So why can't people give more or less? So the two basic approaches seem to be either that it would be, we wouldn't know how much people gave multiple coins. But again, I'm not sure why that would eliminate the possibility of giving a larger single coin. But the Dr. Kanem says that we don't want, and this seems to be a what I think might be a main theme, as we'll try to develop in the little bit of time we have left, is that we don't want anybody to be able to say, Chelki gadol b'mikdash yotzer mimcha. I have a larger portion in the Mishkan than you do. We want everybody, these contributions are being given to create the Makom Hashchim, the place where Hashem's presence is going to dwell, and we want to make sure that everybody has an equal part in that. So nobody can give less, and nobody can give more. Why half and not a whole? So first of all, it's interesting. I think I always assumed, and I think it might be right in some of the Mefarshim. I think.
Why half and not a whole in the sense that why isn't it called its own amount?
Exactly. So I always assumed, like I think what the basis for your question is, that we're talking about like a half dollar, meaning it's a whole coin. The value of it is half of a shekel.
Right.
The Barbanel says they cut the shekel in half. They give half a coin. That answers that question.
It's the weight, not the current.
It is the weight, right. And these were probably perfect coins. And again,
they didn't make coins in the size of half shekel.
It was too expensive to make all these different molds.
I don't know exactly how they made coins at all in the desert. This is what the... But then now... It's from then? And it's half the size of the shekel, half the weight, probably half the weight. The Barbanel is explicit. I don't know why. In my head, I guess because of the way we have currency nowadays. I guess because of the way we have our currency. It was from the time in the desert. It's like from like. Babylonians. So it's a few hundred years later. It is a few hundred years later. They probably assume it's the same. I have no problem with it being the same. I always assumed, and I think most people here did, that we're talking, and probably because that's where we have currency. We don't have any coins that are literally, you know,
the shape of a half moon.
They were? There you go.
I mean, not the Jews. I'm just saying.
I understand that. The fact. So, and then I was reading this this Abarbanel yesterday, and in passing, as almost like as an afterthought, I lost it. How much of an afterthought it was. He kind of just says that I don't see it now. He just said that they. He says that when they were cutting it in half, this is what they did. Okay. Oh, is this it? Last try. No, okay. It didn't feel like showing up. Right, we'll have to find it a different time. But he does say it. I saw it yesterday. So okay, so that would address that question. The Chizkuni says that the reason that it was half is because, and this goes back to the. It is now he's invoking the Chet Egel. Earlier he didn't seem to be saying that. He quoted him a first one that says that, so I guess now he's going back to that. Is that we saw, I guess when we were actually learning Parshas Kisisa, that Ki Boshesh Moshe, that Moshe was late coming. Ki Boshesh, the Medrash says, Boshesh. It became the sixth hour of the day, and Moshe Rabbeinu hadn't come yet. Sixth hour of the day is the middle of the day. So when you're having a coin which is coming to atone for the Chet HaEgel, which took place halfway through the day, you use half a shekel. That's what the Chizkuni says. And Rav Hirsch says, and I think this is the idea that we'll try and use to answer the last few questions. Rav Hirsch says is that the idea that everybody needs to realize, and this I think works a little bit with the idea that we saw from the Das the Kingdom, that why can nobody give more, nobody can give less, that everybody needs to be equal at the same time, is that nobody can give the Dover Sholem to give a full whole amount implies that I can give a contribution to the Mishkan that doesn't need anybody else's contribution. By having it half a shekel, it's showing that because every half needs the other half in order to be complete, that in order for Klal Yisrael to be able to build the Mikdash, everybody has to be able to give their part. Nobody can come and say, I have something that's so unique to give that it doesn't even need to be together with anybody else as it stands on its own. It's Hashir lo yerbev, adal lo yamid. Nobody will give any different amounts, but also nobody can give the entire amount. It has to be half. So then the final question that we were trying to figure out was what was so difficult about this coin that Hashem had to take out a fiery coin and show it to Moshe in order to show him what he should build. And why does the Gemara, the Medrash brings that down, and Rashi quotes that, but the Gemara says that there are only three things that Moshe had trouble with: the menorah, the creepy crawly things, and the moon. So what's so difficult about this? So Tosfos in Menachos asks this question. Tosfos says, I don't understand. The Gemara here says three, but the Medrash says four. What happened to the shekel? Why doesn't the Gemara mention the shekel? And he says, Yesh Lismo, the Lachashim after the shekel, doesn't say it. Yesh Lomar, the Loshaya Chasun Iskash, it doesn't make sense to talk about having trouble there. El Mishum, the Lohava Yada, Vishum Inyan, Imloa Yamareyu. It's not that he had difficulty, but he had no clue at all without God showing him. What does that mean? So the Shita Mekubetzes on the side explains Tosfos, and he says, Inami Hasam on Iskashe Rak. What was his difficulty? His difficulty wasn't in seeing what a coin looks like. Moshe Rabbeinu knows what a coin looks like. What was his difficulty? Rak Behad, the Dover Muat Yechaper al Avon HaEgel. How can it be that you'll give half a shekel in order to get atonement for the Chet HaEgel? The Chet HaEgel was this tremendous, tremendous sin. How could it be? Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't understand that giving half a shekel, this little bit amount of money, is going to give people atonement for this tremendous sin. It just, the two didn't work together. And that's what he had. That's what he had difficulty with. So Hashem had to show him a coin. It wasn't an instruction, it wasn't a prototype that he could figure out how he should make a coin, but he had to teach Moshe Rabbeinu, and he had to show Moshe Rabbeinu that yes, half a coin, even though it's so small, can in fact bring atonement. And what's the idea? Perhaps the idea is that he's teaching Moshe Rabbeinu that sometimes the little things that aren't significant, and that seems to be maybe the lesson of the Machatzit HaShekel overall, is that the little things that aren't significant, the half a shekel, but being given by everybody, those little contributions which come together with everybody else's can sometimes be even greater than those big things that a person is giving on his own and can help achieve kapara. And I think maybe that's one of the connections to Purim. The Gemara says, Amar Reish Lakish, Reish Lakish said, Golev Yadulut Mimisha Amar V'haya Olam, Hashem knew She'asir Hamal Nishkol Shkalim Al Yisrael, that Haman was going to come and pay Shkalim, he was going to pay money to Achashverosh in order to be able to destroy the Jews, Lefichach, and therefore, since God knew Haman was going to do this, Hikdim Shiklehen Lishkalav. Therefore, our shekel comes before his shekel. And that's why the Mishnah says, Be'echad Ba'adar Mashmin Es Hashkalim. That's why we give our shekel before Rosh Chodesh Adar, before Haman Shekel is coming. What does that have to do with each other? What does Haman Shekel have to do with this shekel? This shekel is taking a census in Parashas Kisiso because after the Chinitza Ego. What does that shekel have to do with the shekel of Haman? Okay, same word, it's all money, very nice. Same time of year. Well, what's the Gemara? What's the shekel trying to teach us? So I think maybe the idea is that the strength of Haman's coins, and the reason that Haman was able to succeed, or at the beginning was able to succeed, was because what did he tell Achashverosh? That Bnei Yisrael are an Am Mefuzor Mefurad Bein Ha'amim. That there are people that are separate. They're individuals and they're spread out throughout the land, dispersed all over the place. And Haman knew, and was telling Achashverosh, that's a scary prospect for you as a king. You don't want these people all over the place. But what Haman didn't realize was that it's an even scarier prospect for the Jewish people. That when the Jewish people are a bunch of individuals scattered throughout the world and they're not coming together, then the potential for damage against them is that much greater. So Hashem, before Purim comes along, before this time when it was an Am Mefuzar Mefurah, the people separate, says, you should bring your shkolim. What are our shkolim about? Our shkolim are a half a shekel, which needs the other half. It's that everybody has to give the same amount, and everybody has to come together. And what's the money used for? In the Beis HaMikdash, in the following years, not in the Parshas Ki Sisa. All the years that are followed, when Bnei Yisrael are going to be collecting money for the Shkolim, what are they used for? Korbanos Tzibor. They're used for the Korbanos that atone for the Tzibor as a whole. Korbanos Tzibor are unique. Usually when you bring a Korban, one person is the owner of the Korban. When you have a Tzibor, then the entire Tzibor is the owner. And it has halakhic implications. I'm not going to go into it now, but if you, the Gemaras and Zvachim have different halakhos that apply to a Korban Tzibor than for a Korban Yachid. And maybe that's the connection to Purim. That this shekel, the one which atoned for Klal Yisrael, which brought Klal Yisrael together, is the key for Klal Yisrael in the future to be able to avoid the gezeros that are coming from Haman and other people like Haman, is to get rid of being an Am Mefuzar Mefur Ben Amim and to bring Bnei Yisrael together in Achdus. This last piece?